Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Privateer number 516 right after this. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days. For every man, woman, and child on the planet, today it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. And our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is not good for you, and it's not good for me. Back in 1940, all of us had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. Today, we have a three-day supply in our refrigerators, and we've been taught to believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. But over the past 60 years, we Americans have now traded a one-year food supply for 3 days. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so says the Club of Rome. Now, these evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say let them die for their cause, but let you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number 417-273-4967. Remember, the Subsistence and Survival School is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org and click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. That number again, 417-273-4967, or call direct, or send me an email, I should say, and that's georgegordon.org. All right, last time we gave you the bad news called the Figge Report, and I said, let's compare the Figge Report with the Privateer, the latest issue of the Privateer, and let's see what the numbers tell us. Did the Grace Commission report back in 1982, 3, and 4 tell us what was coming, give us an opportunity to shape up and change our ways? Did we shape up, did we change our ways, or did we continue down the road, and are we now on the brink of economic collapse? Well, here's the latest numbers from the Privateer. Remember, the Privateer is a private newsletter, an economic newsletter that comes from Australia. Published by William A. M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, down in Australia. Again, that's William A. M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa, N-O-O-S-A, Heads, H-E-A-D-S, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Now, on the web, it's www.the-privateer.com. Again, that's www.the-privateer.com, or their email address is capt@the-privateer.com. Global report. The world is leaving the U.S. dollar. The two weeks since our last issue have been very remarkable. Rarely have we seen such a unanimous chorus of treasurers, central bankers, and trade ministers throughout the world all effectively form a circle around the U.S. dollar and politically around the White House, demanding that the Bush administration take urgent steps to defend the U.S. dollar. The official response from the White House to all of this is total silence. U.S. Treasurer Mr. Snow has sent out again to reiterate the mantra of a strong U.S. dollar policy, but nobody in the world believes that story any longer. So what is in fact happening? Well, in fact, the circle is now expanding. The European finance ministers, along with Japan, China, and Russia, Malaysia, and other nations too numerous to count, have all formed this vast global circle in public around the U.S. dollar. And all of them are demanding that the United States act to strengthen the dollar. Because as time passes, and as the White House says and does nothing, the edges of the circle grow ever more substantial as more and more nations join in. Now, in the hole, in the donut, the circle, is the U.S. dollar. Now, Japan has stopped acquiring additional U.S. dollars clear back in March 2004. China is now using arriving U.S. dollars to buy up global resource companies worldwide. Brazil and Africa, or South Africa, are making investments in the European Union and in Russia. OPEC, too, is increasing its investments in the Economic Union, the European Union, while lowering its U.S. dollar cash holdings. The worldwide sum of all of this movement away from the dollar is that the enormous outflows of U.S. dollars are being deflected into external purchases. They're no longer simply piled into ever bigger heaps in the basements of the world's central banks. Well, what's the size of the global dollar problem? As of June 30th, 2004, foreign investors held a total of $8.8 trillion in U.S. financial assets. That's U.S. paper assets. That's a rise of $159 billion from the holdings reported as of March 31, 2004. Now, over the year between June of 2003 and June of 2004, 1 year, these holdings of U.S. paper assets increased by $1 trillion. As of 5 months ago, June 2004, global holdings of U.S. paper assets, $8.8 trillion, represented 85% of the U.S. gross domestic products. On a net basis, as of June 30th, 2004, U.S. foreign liabilities totaled $4 trillion. Foreigners had a net claim against the United States of $4.5 trillion, and capital market assets, readily saleable by foreigners as of June 30th, totaled $6 trillion. Now, a very healthy 67% of total U.S. financial assets are held by foreigners. Foreigners hold 67% of that debt. All of this data is based on the latest Fed Z1 reports. Now, I want to point out here that 85% of your GDP, let's point this out. Let's suppose, let's take a look at your debt picture here, that you make $10,000 a year and you owe $8,500. You might say, well, I could pay that debt off. It might take me a few years. Wait a minute. Let me show you some numbers here that I got across my desk, taking a look at American households. In 1980, the average American household had 18% of their disposable income, which was disposable. 18% of your total disposable income was mad money that you could dispose on anything that you wanted. Today, it's down to 1%. You've only got 1% of your total disposable income. Now, that's your after-tax income. It's called disposable income. Today, Americans are down to 1%. That is, you've got to pay the gas, the power, the mortgage, the credit cards. You've only got 1% that you could dispose of at Disneyland or a Carnival cruise. Now, that's down from 18% to 1%. I don't say that's very good. Now, let's take a look at a couple of more. Outsourcing has become offshoring. Outsourcing. 25% of America's jobs are now outsourced to foreign countries. 25%. That's one job out of four is now held by an Indian, a Mexican, or a Korean. Somebody somewhere in the world is doing your work. Walmart as a country. If Walmart was a country, they would have greater sales than Bangladesh, Switzerland, Sweden, or Austria. Did you hear that? Austria, Sweden, Switzerland, and Bangladesh deal with less money than Walmart. We're in a weak labor market. Employment. As a percentage of the working age population in America, 62%. During the Great Depression, 75% of Americans were employed, 25% were unemployed. Today, 62% of Americans are employed, 5% are officially unemployed. What about the other 33%? Well, they're being supported by mom and dad, or the government, or somebody else, but they're not employed. Furthermore, the quality of U.S. employment since 1994 has dropped 6 percentage points. That is, you're now making 6% less off of your employment today than you were in 1994. You're making more dollars, 6% less purchasing power. Walmart, as a percentage of U.S. retail sales, is at 10%. 10% of all retail sales in the United States now done by one corporation, Walmart. Now, back in the 1980s, when the Grace Commission was commissioned for the express purpose of asking the question, where do these budget deficits? Where do the financial policies of the Keynes economic theory of the 1930s under the Democratic New Deal and Fair Deal? Where has it led us? You can't blame the Democrats. You can't blame the Republicans. They're both in it right up to their necks. And if George Bush could ever be held at fault for economic policy, it was the economic policy that he continued from the Clinton years. More of the same. Clinton's fault was the economic policies of the Reagan-Bush era. More of the same. And it goes back, more of the same, to FDR, who began the process in 1933 by taking us off the gold money, not the gold standard, taking gold money out of circulation, gold coin, and replacing it with paper only. And then Lyndon Baines Johnson took silver in 1965. Now, you know, God told us, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bags, and we decided that God didn't know what he was talking about, and we fixed his mistake. Now, we've been doing that for more than 70 years, and in the process, there's a result that's about to transpire. You know, this $8 trillion national debt and these $500 billion deficits every year, and the outsourcing of our employment and the moving of our industries to China and other countries around the world is going to come back to bite us in the ass at some point in time. There's a point in time when there's a cause and effect relationship. Newsletter writers over the past 30, 40 years have been telling us, you know, we can't continue on like this. The Grace Commission said this won't last past 1995. Some corrections were made in the 1990s. They stretched it out. We're now 10 years into the stretched out period. We're just about to the end of the rope. Now, you're going to have to make some hard, fast decisions, boys and girls, at some point in time. The rosy pictures that are being painted by our president and our public officials and the news media, rosy predictions of a growing economy and everything's fine, just go out and buy a new SUV. That's not what the economic numbers are telling us. They have been telling us that for 20 or 30 years. But we've been borrowing and borrowing. We had a lot of assets to borrow against. We, after all, were the richest, most powerful nation in the world. We had a lot to borrow. But we're tapped out now. Tapped out. And even the rich, when they mortgage everything that they've got and then export their industries to other countries around the world, you know, there's a point in time when even the rich go broke. What's the results when nations go broke? Well, the people don't die day after tomorrow. The people in Argentina went broke a couple of years ago. They're still there. They're struggling. They're suffering. Their standard of living has dropped. They're unemployed. They're scrambling. I suppose they blamed it on their president and their parliament, and certainly their president and their parliament had their share of blame. But it's not all the parliament, it's the people, it's the mindset of the nation. We bought into the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto back in 1932. FDR proposed it, and we said, sounds like a good plan to us. They didn't call it the Communist Manifesto, they called it the New Deal. And then implemented the 10 planks to the manifesto, and we all bought into it. We think big government is the solution to all of our problems, that if there's a problem that needs solving, government will do it. Whether it's employment or sex education in public school, government's got the solution. Well, stand by, boys and girls. We're about to see whether or not that paid off. Now, the economic nature of the global problem is this. Global foreign holders of U.S. financial assets, remember that's about $8.8 trillion of U.S. paper, and have in hand easily saleable U.S. financial paper assets to the tune of $6 trillion, now is in the hands of foreigners. Easily saleable, over the counter. The first item to note is that these foreigners have already taken huge portfolio losses on those investments in U.S. assets, each to the extent that the U.S. dollar has already fallen against their respective national currencies. Now, that's 20% over the last 3 years. So if you were holding U.S. dollars over the past 3 years, you've lost 20% of the purchasing power. Now, that's not the 3% benign inflation that we're being told about by Dan Rather and company. That's 6% a year. 6%. I told you last time, whatever the government tells you, you can double that and be pretty safe. The accuracy will be pretty safe. Just double whatever they're telling you. They've cut it in half, round numbers. Government lies a lot. So the first item to note is that these foreigners have already taken huge portfolio losses on their investments. How long are they going to stand by and watch the dollar erode and take those losses? Even those nations like China, which have pegged their currency to the dollar, or those that have manipulated their currency to stay down against the dollar, have lost compared to other assets that they could have held. So as of June 30th, 2004, foreign investors held 43% of U.S. treasuries, 12% of U.S. agencies like Fannie and Freddie Mac, 25% of all U.S. corporate bonds, 12% of all U.S. equities, and the combined holdings by these foreign investors of treasuries and agencies were almost one quarter of the total outstanding debt in the United States. Now think of this. Foreigners, people like China. Do you think the Chinese are our best buddies? Or Russian? You think those Russians over there are our great friends? There's hardly a country in the world that we haven't conquered or bloodied their nose in the last 50 or 75 years. You think the Japanese, after dropping two nukes on them and defeating them in World War II, when the chips fall and push comes to shove, are going to jump up and say, God bless America, and let's rush over there and help those Yanks? Well, I don't believe that for a minute, and I think that when we're down, they'll kick us in the ribs, step on our nose. That's the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Russians. And those people are holding, the Japanese and the Chinese are holding now, nearly $1 trillion of this readily disposable debt. All they have to do is move into the marketplace and sell. Just put a sell order on it, and there goes our economy. They'll torpedo it in a day. You know, it was something when we held all of this debt in this country, when our people and our corporations and our Federal Reserve and our institutions held this debt. Now, 67% of our Treasury debt is held by foreigners. 25% of all debt is held by foreigners. I don't think that's a very safe and sane economic policy to follow. We're importing over 50% of the energy we use in this country and paying for it with dollars that we're printing up and sending out. We're not paying for it with Caterpillar tractors or grain or other exports. We're paying for it with pieces of paper that says that someday in the future we'll send you a Caterpillar tractor or we'll send you some wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. We don't have anything to pay it with. We don't have gold. We don't have silver. We don't have Caterpillar tractors. And we don't have wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil to pay for the oil coming in or the shoes from China or the big screen TVs from Japan. It's called your balance of payments deficit, and that's $500 billion plus per year, pushing $600 billion next year. Now, it's coming to an end at some point in time. You can't expect other people to work for you while you give them nothing in return. And that's where the rest of the world is. They are working for America, and we are paying them nothing in return. I don't think they're going to do that forever. Now, if they will, that's wonderful. If you can get the Chinese, the Japanese, the Russians, and the European nations to work for us, for worthless pieces of paper that we never have to pay back. Well, let's get after it. I don't believe it. Well, as of June 30th, 2004 now, that's 6 months ago, 25% of the total outstanding debt of the United States is held by foreigners. Now, let's pay close attention to the gigantic magnitude of foreign holdings of key U.S. financial assets. This is the number sequence which could break the U.S. financial system apart. For example, foreigners hold 43% of U.S. Treasury stock, total stock of issued debt paper. 43%. Now, were one or more foreign holders to sell as little as 10% of their current U.S. Treasury paper holdings, it would strike the U.S. financial world to its foundations in less than a week. If they just sold 10% of that paper, anybody, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Russians, the Europeans, anybody, 10% of their paper will torpedo our financial institutions. Do you think that's safe? Do you think that the Chinese are the guys that you want to hold that sword of Damocles over your head? The Japanese? The Russians? The Europeans? Now, were these same foreign holders of U.S. Treasury paper to sell 25% of their Treasury debt paper holdings, the U.S. Treasury, the bond market, and the entire U.S. money and credit system would be dead overnight. Were global foreign holders to really panic and start selling in mass all of their present U.S. financial investments, that is, U.S. treasuries, agencies, corporate bonds, and shares on Wall Street, the dust would settle on a financial collapse not seen since the 1930s. And that's where the world is standing tonight. Now, the only remotely comparable instance in economic history came in 1931 in the wake of the collapse of the Austrian Credit Anstalt Bank. That collapse took the German banks down with it, and the collapse of those German banks made U.S. commercial bank loans to Germany worthless. The end result in the United States in March of 1933 was the collapse of the entire U.S. banking system. FDR closed the banks for 6 weeks, reorganized the bankruptcy. That's what the Great Depression, in effect, was, is a great bankruptcy. I would say that we'd be better off if we went through bankruptcy and reorganization, but we won't. We're going to go into hyperinflation. In fact, Alan Greenspan and the Federal Reserve has already told us a year ago that they are going to print the credit necessary to prevent deflation. Well, and the opposite of deflation is inflation. And inflation on a massive scale like that is hyperinflation. It's the only way that America can pay its debts. And pay its debts it will. So if you're collecting $1,000 a month in Social Security benefits and it'll buy 1,000 loaves of hillbilly bread this month, the day is coming when your $1,000, they'll give you $2,000, $4,000, $8,000, $16,000. You'll be getting $32,000 a month, but it won't buy 1,000 loaves of hillbilly bread. Your $32,000 a month will buy 500 loaves of hillbilly bread. You'll be getting 30 times more dollars that buys half as much goods and services. Now, that's where we're headed. That's where the Argentines are. And that's where the Germans were in 1923, and it's where every country in South America has been. And we're following right after their lead. Now, that's what the Grace Commission told us was coming. Nobody paid attention. Now, for the few of us that have been paying attention, then we need to take action. If you haven't taken action already, well, then if you don't feel bad. Nobody else is either. But it'll come back and bite you in the butt in the final analysis. All of us are going to suffer. Nobody's getting out of this thing alive. Nobody's getting out of here unscathed. Some of us may get off a little lighter than somebody else. Those that are prepared a little better will probably do a little better. Now, depressions and reorganizations offer great opportunities for profit and profitability. If you're positioned correctly when this deflation occurs, houses that today are selling for $150,000 will be buyable for $10,000 apiece. Houses that were selling for $7,000 in 1927 were selling for $500 in Eureka, California in 1934. My grandmother bought a great big old Victorian house on 8th Street in Eureka, California in 1944 for $4,400 cash. Half price. Half its 1927 price. Oh, there's opportunity out there. Don't ever kid yourself. It doesn't make any difference whether the market's going up or the market's going down. There's always somebody out there that's making money, whether it's going up or going down. But by and large, most people are going to get caught in this squeeze, in this hyperinflationary squeeze, with their debt structure intact. And when it happens, they'll be wiped out. The average American family today has a paltry $25,000, and that includes your house, your car, all of your assets, your savings, everything you've got. If you're an average American, you've got $25,000 worth of assets. I say that's chicken feed. The average American family today, if they'd been paying attention to what we were doing back in the 50s, today, in American money today, should have $250,000. Minimum, $250,000 to keep up with inflation from the 1950s. $25,000, chicken feed. Well, at present, right now, this minute, the Bush administration is trying on one of modern history's greatest bluffs. They're playing chicken with all the rest of the world. Now, if through the joint actions, the West's other central banks, that is the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of China, and most of the lesser banks, suddenly begin a global operation to buy up enormous quantities of U.S. dollars to support its international value, the U.S. gets another free ride. And that's what the Bush administration is preparing for. It's what they believe is going to happen. It's what happened in the 1970s. I hope they're right. I hope the rest of the world will continue to lend to us and we don't ever have to pay it back. That'd be a great program, if in fact it comes to fruition. Well, I'm not going to bet on that. I don't think that's what's going to occur, but then that's the official policy of the U.S. government, that no matter how high the deficits, no matter how much the debt load, the rest of the world has to support the dollar, because if they don't, and the dollar continues to erode, all of the dollars that they now have in their portfolios will lose value. They've lost 20% in the last 3 years. 20%. That's a fifth. And that's why they've all circled the wagons around the United States. They're demanding now that we take action to support the dollar. What action can we take? We don't have any assets. We don't have any money. We don't even have the productive capacity. Do you know that in America today, we could not build an aircraft carrier in the United States today and put a label on it that said Made in America? We don't even have a foundry left in America big enough to cast the anchors for an aircraft carrier. Not that an aircraft carrier would need an anchor, but if you were going to cast one for it, you'd have to go to USA, Japan to have the Japanese cast it. Boeing aircraft gets its tail assemblies from Singapore, its engines from Rolls-Royce in Great Britain. We're living in a world economy. That's just where reality's at. If we went to war like we went to war in 1941, 42, we would be relying upon the rest of the world to send us the parts and supplies to build the tanks and the guns, the aircraft. We've exported our industries to China, Japan, and all the countries in between. Our shoe industry is now sitting in China. They're sitting over there on our debt paper, waiting for us to send them Caterpillar tractors or something. They're sitting there expecting that they're going to be able to spend those dollars in the United States and get something for it. But everybody's waking up to the fact that that probably isn't going to happen. And the Bush administration is betting that, well, if you don't throw good money after bad, then you're going to lose all of the money or a great portion of the money that you've already earned. I'm sure that they're going to sit over there and say, well, if we continue to support the dollar, we're going to be throwing good money after bad. And America represents 20% of the entire world's gross domestic product. When you knock America out of the game, you knock the props out of the entire world's economy. You know, this is starting to sound like Bible prophecy. We're starting to talk about biblical proportions in a world economic collapse described in the book of Revelation, of all places. And we're sitting in a period of history. Never before have people sat. Well, unless you look back at Noah's flood. Now, the Messiah made an observation back in Matthew 24. He said, never before and never again would there be a great tribulation like this. He said, then shall be great tribulation such as was not from the time of Noah. It's quite a time that we're living in. Dan Rather, the president, and everybody else is telling us everything is going rosy. Everything is great. That's what the Messiah said. He said they will be marrying and giving in marriage. And that's what they were doing at the time of the flood. They were marrying and giving in marriage and living their lives, and the flood came and took them all away. He said, that's exactly what it's going to be like. Exactly what it's going to be like at the second coming. We're sitting on the knife's edge of a cataclysm. Never before in the history of the world have we seen numbers like these. I haven't seen anybody get very excited about it. Of course, the great Mugambo, he's kind of excited about it. He writes a newsletter. The privateer, he's excited about it. He's writing a newsletter. I report from time to time, but I don't see anybody getting very excited about it. Well, listen to this. Now, if the rest of the world decides not to do this, and if the rest of the world refrains from once again bailing the United States out, then the onus rebounds back to the United States. And if the Bush administration does not do the things necessary to support the dollar, such as lower spending, lower budget deficits, lower trade deficits, higher interest rates, then it's only a matter of time before a large number of these foreign holders of U.S. paper and financial assets panic and start a cascade and a sell-off. The other possibility is that the Bush administration are the ones who panic when they realize that the rest of the world will not be coerced into rescuing the U.S. dollar. Their track record in the face of past near panics is clear. They start a war. And that's what we saw in World War II. The Great Depression, up until 1929, set off a chain of events. The Japanese attacked China. And later, we saw the Russians, the Germans, the Italians. They got into it over Poland, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Europe. It drags the world into war, and that's what the Book of Revelation is all about. It's about an end-time war. It's world war on a scale unimagined, except in Bible prophecy. It's biblical in its scope. Now, the Bush administration is going to bet on the hand that they're playing. I would submit to you that the United States doesn't have much of a hand to play, not in this game. Now, we've been told by conservatives over the past 50 or 75 years, at least my entire lifetime, starting with my granddad, said, this can't continue. And of course, others have been saying, this can't continue. It's gone on for 70 years. It's like crying wolf back in the 1970s. This can't go on. It did. In the 1980s, this can't go on, but it did. In the 1990s, there's an end coming, but it didn't come. It's the little boy crying wolf syndrome. You've heard this for so long, you don't believe it. The Apostle Peter made an observation. He said that in the end times, scoffers would come. And they would say, where is the promise of his coming? Scoffers would come. And when I was a kid, they used to say, you know, that guy is slower than the second coming of Christ. It was kind of a proverb. Talk about slow. Talk about an event that's never going to happen, never going to occur. Well, now, if the European Union and Japan once again bail out the U.S., fearing the consequences of a Bush panic, then we can expect a global wave of much higher prices for all kinds of everyday consumer goods in about a year. If there is no bailout, the most sanguine outlook. Hang on. The most sanguine outlook for the U.S. recession followed by a world downturn. So we're going to have a world downturn. Something is going to turn down. Is it going to be catastrophic, or is it just going to be terrible? I was reading a newsletter the other day, and the guy said the dollar has already collapsed. And I thought about that for a second, and I said, well, gee, when did the dollar collapse? Well, it collapsed between 1930 and 2000. The dollar lost 96.5% of its purchasing power in that 70 years. Is that a collapse of the dollar? If you lost 96.5% of your estate, would you say that your estate was in a state of collapse? Well, you might say, but we still have 3.5 cents left, and we do. Now, I can remember houses. When I was a kid, the house across the street, 1960, sold for $27,000. We thought the end of the world had arrived. Remember the house we were living in 1944, sold for $4,400. By 1960, now that's 15 years later, the house across the street now selling for $27,000. It had moved up from about $5,000 to $25,000. It was at five times what it was in 1944, in just 15 years. Now take a look at that same $25,000, $26,000, $27,000 house across the street from our house on H Street in Eureka, California. Boy, that house will be worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 today. I remember a buddy of mine said he's got a house worth $236,000 down on Myrtle Avenue, for crying out loud. Compared to the H Street house in 1960, that house on Myrtle Avenue wouldn't have sold for $10,000. If David's house is worth $225,000 to $250,000, that house on H Street's worth double that or more. Now, the housing prices are out of sight because we're in an inflationary bubble. That's where we're at. And when that bubble breaks, those that are buying those houses for $500,000 today will be selling those houses for $50,000 or less. They'll be out there on the market. That's the time to buy. Today's the time to be invested in cash, not stocks and bonds. Today's the day when you need to be in the actual physicals, not in speculatives. I got through with the Figge report. I hadn't read that report for a couple, 3 years. I got through with the Figge report, and I went upstairs, and I said, you better have a four-year supply of shoes. You better have a four-year supply of food, clothing, and shelter on hand, because the prices are going to skyrocket. And what's worse, as we saw during World War II, some things will be totally unavailable. Totally unavailable. When America is unable to meet its debt commitments, we'll have to pay cash. Just like anybody else in the world, you have to pay cash. So when you go to buy coffee from Colombia, you got to pay cash for it. Today, they're accepting worthless U.S. paper. The time is going to come when the Colombians, the Venezuelans, the Saudi Arabians are going to demand gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. And we don't have enough of that. There are going to be shortages and sky-high prices. Coffee that sells today for $4 for a can will be selling for $8, $16, $32, and $64 a can. And that's if it's available. There will be rationing. Rationing. That's what we did in World War II. In order to make sure that everybody gets an equal shot at the dwindling means of survival, the government will issue ration cards, and then you'll have to have a ration card to buy the coffee, even if you got the $64. Or they'll artificially peg the price at $32 with three beans, six buttons, or two cards. I lived through that. I know how that game is played. In a deflation, cash is king. Those with the money can buy the dwindling amounts of goods and services. In a hyperinflation, you've got to have ration. We'll get it. So I said, today's the day to be buying. Get into the physicals. And if you've got gold, stop and think about it for a minute. Go down to your gold broker and put a coin on the counter and say, Bob, cash this in for me. And he will. He'll write you a check. He'll pull out some $100 bills. Let's try this. 1933. Remember what happened when Roosevelt closed the banks? The banks are closed. Now go down to Bob and say, Bob, cash this in. Where's Bob going to get the paper? Who's going to clear Bob's check when you go to cash in your gold? So another little thing popped into my mind today, and I said, gee, did you see what happened in Russia about 5 years ago when they changed the currency over the weekend? Came up with a two-tier currency, that is Russian rubles to be used outside of Russia, and Russian rubles to be used inside of Russia. We'll probably have the same thing here in the United States. When that happens, you'll get a devaluation, so you'll take it in your assets, dollar-denominated assets. You'll take it in the shorts. And then you won't be able to use your dollars outside the country. You won't be able to buy anything outside the country. It'll all be regulated and controlled as it comes through the borders, because it's going to have to be paid for in cash. And of course, you don't have any cash. Now, what does that boil down to? Let's mull that one over for a minute. The only cash you're going to have that isn't going to be changed or manipulated will be your clad coin. You need to have a few bucks on hand of the clad coin. So I said to the wife, I said, well, picture this. The banks close. You can't sell your gold. How are you going to pay the power bill? How are you going to pay the phone bill? And after all, that's what life's all about. It's your standard of living, isn't it? How are you going to maintain your standard of living? And so what happened in South America, they start lopping off zeros. First of all, you go into hyperinflation. That means that whatever it is you're selling has to keep up with the current rate of inflation. Told you about the lady last time. She buys a loaf of bread. She's walking out to the checkout counter, and the price goes up from the time she picks it up off the shelf to the time she gets to the checkout counter, for crying out loud. Now, that's hyperinflation, 5,000% a year. Prices are going up constantly. Money is constantly coming into circulation. People are constantly borrowing more money. Wages are constantly going up. Prices go up 20%. Wages go up 10%. Now, picture that one. Then, the banks close. Chaos ensues. You can't meet your balance of payments. You're on a cash basis. Coffee is no longer being imported into the United States in quantities large enough to supply the demand. Neither are shoes or hardware. All these things that are not being produced outside of the United States. Shortages develop. The only thing left of any value that you can use will be clad coin. So for about 6 months, or maybe a year, you need to have enough clad coin on hand to pay your essential bills. Well, that's assuming you want to keep the power on. Of course, then you got the mortgage to pay, and are you going to be working? Are you dependent from payday to payday upon your job? Because if you are, well, you're going to be in a world of hurt, unless, of course, you're working for the government. Now, we noticed here with 5,000% inflation, the government workers, that's one worker in seven here in the United States, about 14% of the population, they seem to get by pretty well. The other 86% of us are going to be scrambling, aren't we? So tuck it away in your hearts, boys and girls. There are some changes coming. The Figge people told us it was coming. The Grace Commission said we need to be taking action. We didn't take any action. It was more of the same through the 80s and 90s. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. Take a look here at the privateer dragnet routine. The Japanese government is going to ask for a strong U.S. dollar policy, and if the U.S. dollar does continue to fall, there will be enormous capital flight from the U.S. dollar. So says Mr. Kaoru, K-A-O-R-U, Yosano. Kaoru Yosano, chairman of the DP's Policy Council. He added that Japan would be calling on the G7 governments to demand that the U.S. deal with its federal fiscal deficit that has helped to prompt the dollar's decline. Now, a senior Japanese Ministry of Finance official followed this up by saying that if the U.S. does not push up interest rates to make the dollar attractive, the one-way sentiment on the U.S. dollar will have a negative impact on the flow of capital into the United States. Japan is warning the United States of a prospect of capital flight. And then there's the oily business and U.S. paper money. OPEC oil exporters have sharply reduced their own exposure to the U.S. dollar over the past 3 years. According to the very latest data from the Bank of International Settlements, the members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries have cut the proportion of deposits held in U.S. dollars from 75% in the third quarter of 2001 to 61% as of June 2004. This latest Bank of International Settlements data in the organization's quarterly review states that OPEC countries' stock of U.S. dollar-denominated deposits has fallen by 4% in cash terms since 2002, in spite of OPEC revenue surging to record levels this year. All right, now take a look at this. Japan is not buying any more U.S. dollars, and they're threatening. They're threatening us. The OPEC nations, that is Venezuela and Saudi Arabia and the other countries that export oil to us, have cut the number of dollars that they're holding. And pretty shortly, here's what happens when this goes on. Now, it's happened before and it'll happen again. When they stop taking U.S. dollars, they'll say, okay, now you Americans have to pay us in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, or in some kind of currency that is maintaining its value. Probably the European euro. Probably. Well, you know, how many euros does our central bank hold? And we'll have to be very careful because we'll be put on a cash basis. That's what happens when you can't pay your credit cards or you max them out. You suddenly go from credit to cash only. Now just picture your family going from your credit cards and your payment system to cash only, starting in the morning. How's that going to impact your standard of living? Picture that now. Get ready for it. Now OPEC has cut the proportion of their deposits denominated in U.S. dollars by more than 13 percentage points over the past 3 years, largely in favor of the euro, according to the latest quarterly report from the Bank of International Settlements. The share of euro-denominated deposits rose to 20% from 12% over the same period. If this keeps going on, the U.S. will have to buy oil in euros, not dollars. Now, the world of money, as seen from inside the United States, looks like this. Since its U.S. election night, the U.S. dollar has dropped by 4% against the euro, 2.6% against the yen, 4.3% against the British pound, and even 4.3% against the Brazilian real. Remember the Brazilian real, the currency that inflated 5,000% back in the 1980s? The United States and its NAFTA partners have seen a U.S. dollar decline of 2.4% against the Mexican peso, of all things, and 2.6% against the Canadian dollar. I can remember the Canadian dollar being worth 5% more than the American dollar when I was a kid. Canadians used to boast about how the Canadian dollar was worth more than the American dollar. That was back in the 1940s, 1950s. I can see the American dollar weakening against the Canadian dollar, but the American dollar weakening against the peso, the Mexican peso? Think about that. Now here comes a blast from Europe. European finance ministers have challenged the United States on its financial deficits. The Belgian and Austrian finance ministers said that a December 6th statement by the Euro ministers and the European Central Bank, that's the ECB, was aimed at the White House. The statement said this, quote, excessive volatility and disorderly movements in exchange rates are undesirable for economic growth. In particular, recent sharp moves of exchange rates are unwelcome and not conducive to orderly adjustments of external imbalances. Now here's what the United States is doing. We contract for a dollar's worth of oil or goods, and then we pay 80 cents for it. Well, the people that are holding that paper are saying that is not conducive to orderly economic growth. Yeah, I can understand that. You know, if you and I contracted, and then you said to me, I want you to deliver to me 100 gallons of milk, and I will pay you $400. You pay me $400, and I deliver you 80 gallons of milk. What would you think of that? Wouldn't you say, well, what happened to my other 20 gallons of milk? Well, I devalued the dollar, or I raised my prices. Well, governments don't raise their prices. They devalue their currency. They just print more of it. And the more that's printed, the less the money that's in circulation is worth. I mean, you know, you don't have to go to Harvard Business School to figure that out now, do you? We had $3.5 trillion in U.S. dollars in circulation in 1987, $9 trillion in 2000. We're headed toward $13.5 trillion by the end of next year. They're printing money just as fast as they can print it. and it makes the money of the past worth less. In fact, $1987 are going to be worth about 25 cents compared to the $2005. This is the Bush administration's economic policies. And they're forced into it because, you know, if we're going to maintain our standard of living, if we're going to keep things going, we've got to print more money and keep the economy cooking. That's the policy that we inherited from the Roosevelt years in the 1930s, deficit financing. But you know, deficit financing comes to an end when you've consumed all of your assets. When you've mortgaged everything that you've got, and you can't get another pay raise, and you can't borrow any more money, there comes a point in time when all of your creditors say, no more. And that's what happened in Argentina 2 years ago. It's what happened to the Russians 5 years ago. It's what happened to the Germans in 1923. It's happened to Americans in 1783. Our money collapsed. The continental currency collapsed in 1783. Soldiers and sailors would come back and make sport of all of the money they were being paid and had suits tailored in continental currency as a joke. All right, now that's what's coming. So get ready for it. Now, one, two, three, all together. Now, Indonesia is merely the latest central bank to suggest that it may sell U.S. treasuries if the U.S. dollar continues to decline. Russia's central bank rocked currency markets by saying it may swap from U.S. dollar-denominated assets into euro. China raised eyebrows late last month after China Business News reported Beijing had cut its U.S. treasury debt holdings. This type of announcement is popping up on a daily basis around the world. Monetary virtue is fast becoming equated with selling and dumping of U.S. dollars. So if you're still denominated in U.S. dollars, start thinking about unloading. They're not going to prop up the dollar. It's going to collapse. The last 3.5 cents of it is about to collapse. Now, I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you next week, next month, or next year. I'm just saying we've had our warning for 25 years. We didn't pay attention to it. So if it happens, you can't say that you weren't told. And I think deep down inside, we all know it's coming, don't we? I mean, all of us could see at some point in time that the roller coaster ride would come to an end, didn't we? Well, I'm about out of time. We're going to have to leave it right here. We'll pick it up right here tomorrow night, same time, same station, here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. That's it. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Thanks for listening. Until then, good night, friends.